Hello, everyone. You are listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouement on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. And have I got a story for you today? Today, we will be taking a look back on Avatar: The Last Airbender, which is an American animated television series that was created for Nickelodeon Television by Michael Dante DiMartino and Brian Kenitzigo, with Aaron Hazaz as head writer. It aired on Nickelodeon for about 3 seasons from February 2005 to July 2008. And it is set in a world where people can manipulate one of the 4 elements: water, earth, fire, or air. They can manipulate them with telekinetic variants of the Chinese martial arts known as bending. And the only individual who can bend all 4 elements, the Avatar, is responsible for maintaining harmony between the world's 4 nations and serves as the bridge between the spirit world and the physical world. The show itself is presented in a style that combines anime with American cartoons and relies on the imagery of mainly East Asian culture, with some South Asian, New World, and Inuit influences as well. The series' story is centered around the journey of 12-year-old Aang, the current avatar and last survivor of his nation, the Air Nomads, along with his friends Sokka, Katara, and then later, Toph, as they all strive to end the Fire Nation's war against the nations of the other world. It also follows the story of Zuko, the exiled prince of the Fire Nation, who is seeking to restore his lost honor by capturing Aang, while he is accompanied by his wise uncle Iroh, and later that of his ambitious sister, Azula. Now, Avatar: The Last Airbender is still one of the most commercially and critically successful series by audiences and critics alike. The show itself was praised for its art direction, soundtrack, cultural references, humor, characters, and themes. Some of these themes even touch on risky topics to talk about within youth entertainment, such as war and genocide and imperialism. And the show itself even won numerous awards during and long after its original release. A number of critics have even referred to Avatar as one of the best animated television series of all time. And the series is so popular that it even spawned an ongoing comic book series, a prequel novel series, and an animated sequel series in the form of The Legend of Korra, as well as a not-so-well-received live-action film, but we don't really talk about that. So, with this series, the story itself is separated into 3 different storylines over an overarching plot and premise. Today, I will be focusing on mainly Book 2, otherwise known as Season 2, of the entire television run. And before we get into any of the plot summaries, production background, character arcs, production techniques, and what aspiring storytellers and writers can learn from this series, I'd like to give a full-on spoiler warning to those who have not seen this show, because it is definitely one of the best television series I've ever watched. Even since when I was a kid. I remember waking up wondering when this show was going to air, because I could not get enough of everything that I just described before. It is probably one of my favorite TV shows of all time, and there is a reason why I chose this series to talk about today. And it is for arguably one of the best character arcs I've ever witnessed within any kind of media ever. But again... this series must be experienced for those of you who have not seen it, and it must be experienced without any kind of spoilers whatsoever. Now, just a brief synopsis of the overall show for mainly the first 2 seasons. I'd like to start from where a century before the main show's events, before the main episode, the young Avatar Aang, who is afraid of his new responsibilities, fled his home and was forced into the ocean by a storm while encasing himself in suspended animation within an iceberg near the South Pole. Shortly after, Fire Lord Sozin, then ruler of the Fire Nation, launched a world war to expand his nation's empire. Knowing that the Avatar must be an air nomad, he carried out a genocide against the air nomads with the help of a comet enhancing Firebender's power. 100 years later, Katara and Sokka, teenagers of the Southern Water Tribe, accidentally discover Aang and revive him. In the first season, Aang travels with Katara and Sokka to the Northern Water Tribe so that he can learn waterbending and be prepared to defeat the Fire Nation. Prince Zuko, the banished son of the current Fire Lord Ozai, pursues them, accompanied by his uncle Iroh, hoping to capture the Avatar to restore his honor. Aang is also pursued by Zhao, a Fire Nation admiral who is aspiring to win Ozai's favor. When Zhao's navy attacks the Northern Water Tribe, he kills the Moon Spirit. Yue, the princess of the tribe, ends up sacrificing her life to revive it, and Aang drives off the enemy fleet. In the second season, Aang learns earthbending from Toph Beifong, a blind 12-year-old earthbending prodigy. Zuko and Iroh, now fugitives from the Fire Lord, become refugees in the Earth Kingdom, eventually settling in its capital Ba Sing Se. Both groups are pursued by Azula, Zuko's sister. Aang's group travels to Ba Sing Se to seek the Earth King's support for an attack on the Fire Nation, timed to an upcoming solar eclipse, during which Firebenders will be powerless. Azula instigates a coup and brings the capital under Fire Nation control, while Zuko ends up siding with his sister. And in the process, Aang is mortally wounded by Azula, but is then revived by Katara. Now that was the overall plot synopsis for both Books 1 and Books 2. But I would like to talk a little bit more specifically about Zuko's overall synopsis throughout both books, otherwise known as seasons, in order to more directly talk about his character arc later on. Now with Zuko, for Book 1, Water, he is introduced as the main antagonist who is attempting to capture Avatar Aang in hopes of reclaiming his honor. Throughout the season, he pursues the Avatar, at times both helped and hindered by Iroh, his uncle. Zuko competes in his quest against Zhao, an ambitious Fire Nation admiral, who is also attempting to capture the Avatar for political gain. When Zhao captures Aang, Zuko disguises himself as the Blue Spirit and rescues Aang from Zhao's fortress to prevent Zhao from accomplishing his goal. Later, Zuko escapes an assassination attempt plotted by Zhao during the invasion of the Northern Water Tribe, but both nearly die in a snowstorm before they are rescued by Aang's friends. Zuko encounters Zhao and attacks him, but the Ocean Spirit abducts Zhao before the fight is concluded. Zuko attempts to save Zhao from the Ocean Spirit, but Zhao is too proud to accept Zuko's help. Zuko then survives the battle with help from Iroh, who betrayed Zhao to protect the Water Spirits. In retaliation for Iroh's betrayal and Zuko's failure to capture the Avatar, Fire Lord Ozai assigns Zuko's younger sister Azula to capture both Zuko and Iroh. At the start of the second season, Book 2, Earth, Zuko and Iroh travel the Earth Kingdom as impoverished refugees, who are pursued by Azula. After briefly quarreling and parting ways with Iroh, Zuko reunites with his uncle against Azula. After Azula wounds Iroh, Zuko nurses Iroh back to health, and Iroh teaches Zuko the rare firebending technique of redirecting lightning. Zuko and Iroh travel to the walled city of Ba Sing Se and find employment at a tea shop in the slums. Zuko reluctantly adapts to his new life until he learns of Aang's presence in Ba Sing Se and attempts to steal Aang's pet bison, Appa. However, Iroh convinces Zuko to abandon his quest and let Appa go, putting the Blue Spirit to rest. Azula infiltrates the city to stage a coup and arranges a trap for Zuko and Iroh. Zuko is imprisoned together with Aang's friend Katara, and the two share a brief moment of compassion before Aang and Iroh come to rescue them. Azula eventually convinces Zuko to betray Iroh Katara, and the Avatar. In the resulting fight, Aang is mortally wounded, though later revived by Katara, and Iroh is arrested for helping Aang and Katara escape from the conquered city. Now stay tuned for our next segment, where I'll be going over the brief production background of the overall making of this show. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouement, on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Hello, everyone. We are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouement, on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Today, we have been taking a special look back at Avatar: The Last Airbender, which is a Nickelodeon animated television series that garnered a huge critical and commercial following by both critics and audiences alike. So far, we have looked at the official plot synopses of Book 1, Water, and Book 2, Earth, the first two seasons in the overall television series. So for the production background, I looked into how Avatar: The Last Airbender came to be as an idea and an eventual concept for an overall television series. Avatar: The Last Airbender was co-created and produced by Michael Dante DeMartino and Brian Canizico at Nickelodeon Animation Studios in Burbank, California. Its animation was mostly done by South Korean studios JM Animation, DR Movie, and MOI Animation. According to Canizico, the series was conceived in early 2001 when he took an old sketch of a balding, middle-aged man and imagined the man as a child. He drew the character herding bison in the sky and showed the sketch to DeMartino, who was watching a documentary about explorers trapped at the South Pole. Canizico described the early development of the concept as, "There's an air guy, along with these water people, who are trapped in a snowy wasteland, and maybe some fire people are pressing down on them." These co-creators successfully pitched the idea to Nickelodeon later on, specifically the Nickelodeon vice president and executive producer Eric Coleman, and the series was eventually introduced to the public in a teaser reel at Comic-Con 2004, with the original pilot premiering on February 21st, 2005. In an interview later on, Canizico said, "Mike and I, we were really interested in other epic legends and lore properties, like Harry Potter and Lord of the Rings, but we knew that we wanted to take a different approach to that type of genre. Our love for Japanese anime, Hong Kong action, and Kung Fu cinema, yoga, and Eastern philosophies led us to the initial inspiration for Avatar: The Last Airbender." Now, the series is notable for borrowing extensively from East Asian art and mythology for its universe. Its creators employed cultural consultants Edwin Zane and calligrapher Siu Ling Li to help determine its art direction and settings. Its character designs are influenced by Chinese art and history, Hinduism, Taoism, and Buddhism and yoga. Jeremy Zuckerman and Benjamin Nguyen created the series' music and sound design together in the early developmental stages and then went on to divide the tasks, with Zuckerman taking on the musical responsibility and Nguyen the sound design. They experimented with a wide range of instruments, including the guzheng, pipa, and duduk, to watch and help match the show's Asia-influenced setting. The art style of the fictitious locations used in the series are based on real locations in Asia. Sites such as the Forbidden City and the Great Wall of China in Beijing were inspirations for the Earth Kingdom city of Ba Sing Se, and Water Tribe locations were based on Inuit and Serenaki cultures. According to writer Aaron Hazaz, early Fire Nation designs were based on Japanese culture. To avoid accidentally making broad statements, they redesigned many settings and peoples to be more broadly inspired, as they like to describe it. For the final design, the creators went with a more Chinese style for the Fire Nation's clothing and architecture. For instance, the Fire Temple was based on the Yellow Crane Tower as its flame-like architectural elements were a perfect motif for the Fire Nation architecture according to the creators. The gestures used by the Bendu characters are derived from Chinese martial arts, for which the creators employed Sifu Kisu of the Harmonious First Chinese Athletic Association as a consultant. Each fighting style is unique to the benders who use them or characters who are aligned to a certain element. For example, practitioners of waterbending use movements influenced by Tai Chi and focused on alignment, body structure, breath, and visualization. Hung Gar was the inspiration for practitioners of earthbending and was chosen for its firmly rooted stances. Northern Shaolin, which uses strong arm and leg movements, was chosen to represent firebending. Ba Gua, which uses dynamic circular movements and quick directional changes, were used for airbending. The Chu Gar Southern Praying Mantis style can also be seen practiced by the earthbender known as Toph, who develops a unique fighting style as a result of her blindness. Asian cinema also influenced the presentation of these martial arts bending moves as well. The series itself explored many concepts that were rarely touched upon in youth entertainment, including issues relating to war, genocide, imperialism, colonialism, and totalitarianism, as well as gender discrimination and female empowerment. Marginalization and oppression were also used as philosophical questions that also dealt with fate, destiny, and free will as well. The show is set during a period where the entire world is engulfed in an imperialistic war that was initiated by the Fire Nation. While war is a constant backdrop, the show depicts these effects through the eyes of common people, the oppressed Earth Kingdom citizens, as well as indoctrinated Fire Nation children, to show how war makes victims of everyone. And while the Fire Nation is presented as the instigator of violence, the show also depicts the systematic inequality experienced by residents in the Earth Kingdom city of Ba Sing Se, as well as the nefarious activities of the city's secret police. These situations show the corrupting nature of power and the nuances of good and evil. And the show also introduces viewers to genocide early on when protagonist Aang visits his former home in the Southern Air Temple. He arrives to discover his people have been massacred and allows him to display a range of emotions from rage to loss. The character Zuko and his relationship with his father and Uncle Iroh is the series' main redemption arc and presents the show's message that destiny and fate are not binding or set by other people, but can be changed. In Season 2, Zuko struggles to conform to the destiny and path determined by his father, but Iroh prods him on, asking, "Who are you, and what do you want?" The show also represents a diverse cast of characters in order to tackle the issue of marginalization. For example, in introducing a blind character like Toph and a paraplegic boy like Teo, the show depicted characters with vulnerabilities overcoming their physical and societal limitations. This is also true when it comes to the show's female characters. For example, female protagonist Kotara faces systematic sexism when she reaches the Northern Water Tribe to learn waterbending. In another instance, her brother Sokka is initially dismissive of the all-female Kyoshi warriors, but learns to respect and appreciate their skills. According to Kirk Hamilton of Kotaku, these themes represent the show's message that it's more important to be yourself than to hew to the role society expects of you. The legacy of Avatar: The Last Airbender is that it became a cult classic and had a large impact, especially within the 2010s, on how networks viewed animated programs. Subsequent children's shows would often blur the lines between youth and adult programming featuring more adult themes. Avatar: The Last Airbender helped bring about this new trend of blurring the lines between children-centered and adult-oriented TV programming. A number of critics have essentially referred to Avatar: The Last Airbender as one of the best animated television series of all time and one of the most influential. In 2013, TV Guide included Avatar among the 60 greatest cartoons of all time list. And in 2018, Vanity Fair ranked the series as the 11th best animated TV show. Avatar was also ranked the 36th best animated series on IndieWire's 2018 list of the 50 best animated series of all time. Tune in for our next segment, where we look into one of the main reasons why it is considered one of the best TV shows of all time. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouement on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Hello, everyone. We are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Denouement on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. So far, we have been taking a look back on Avatar The Last Airbender, the American animated Nickelodeon television series that aired originally from 2005 to 2008. We have so far looked at the overall plot summaries of Book 1, Water, and Book 2, Earth, the first two seasons in Avatar The Last Airbender. And we have also taken a look back on the production background and history behind creating and developing Avatar The Last Airbender and its world. Now I'd like to take a little bit more time to talk about Prince Zuko, one of the show's most underrated, but still very much appreciated, important characters of all time within this TV series. Prince Zuko is of the Fire Nation and son of Fire Lord Ozai, the series' main antagonist. He continuously seeks capturing the Avatar in order to regain his honor and return home from his exile. Zuko not only wants to regain his lost honor from forfeiting a duel with his Fire Lord father, but also regain his father's admiration and love in the process. This is the overall baseline for Zuko's character at the start of Avatar The Last Airbender. But something different happens with Book 2. Book 2 is what I will mostly be focusing on for today's show, as it is what I think is the most important part of Zuko's character arc that must be analyzed in order to fully comprehend and see how his redemption from villain to hero eventually happens. But at the start of Book 2 of the second season, what has Zuko done? Zuko has tried multiple times throughout Book 1 at capturing Aang, who is the Avatar, while competing against a Fire Nation admiral known as Zhao. Their climactic fight during the finale of the first season sees Zuko duel Zhao one last time before Zhao is ultimately abducted by the Ocean Spirit while refusing Zuko's help to get away out of pride. So, because of all of these events, what does Zuko now want? Well, not much has honestly changed. I mean, Zuko wants to restore his honor even more now, and especially with the fact that he and his uncle Iroh are now impoverished refugees who are now fleeing from his sister Azula because of Iroh's betrayal during the first season's events. Zuko and Iroh are now targets of the Fire Nation, specifically by members of their own family. And while traveling the Earth Kingdom, they both seek what can be considered to be two different ideals of life. While on the run with his uncle, Zuko decides that he must part ways with Iroh in order to find his own way. But what way does Zuko need to find a way that is from his uncle? Well, one thing that he might have realized is that his own way of survival is different from Iroh's. He repeatedly steals from anyone who crosses his path in order to survive. He may see this as necessary out of survival, but Iroh sees it as the opposite, as dishonorable. This quarrel is what leads to their brief split into one of the show's most important episodes. At the start of Zuko Alone, Zuko is the episode's namesake. He is alone. He has left to travel without his uncle Iroh in order to hold on to his mission, his compulsive need for honor and capturing the Avatar. Zuko sees no hope without his honor, without the completion of this mission. Right at the start of the episode itself, he almost steals again, this time from a clearly traveling family, but heeds his uncle's words of there is honor in poverty, and chooses not to instead. After traveling some more, he rolls into a village full of corrupt Earth Kingdom soldiers and honest, hard-working families. Instead of stealing from either party, though, he finds a temporary place to stay with a family and even helps them in their work. It is here that Zuko learns that people don't actually like the Fire Nation, because the Fire Nation is not out to make the world a better place, but to instead destroy it. The audience begins to see him sympathize with common civilians of one of his nation's enemies. He learns and knows from this family about their problems, about treating them like equals, and about what it's like to hope, and then fail into further despair when he reveals his true nationality in order to save the same family from the corrupt Earth Kingdom soldiers. This episode is the first in his story that really captures the human aspect that is developing within. Humbling himself down from royalty to commoner puts Zuko on a path to the reevaluation of his choices and decisions. Further flashbacks reveal that even within the Fire Nation itself, Zuko was still a young boy that was kind and passionate to those around him. These flashbacks add to his current confusion and eventually comes close to understanding that even if he were to come back, he wouldn't want to continue the Fire Nation's quest, his father's quest. His exile has made him cold and vapid, in the shell of what he used to be, resulting in a strive for acceptance out of the Avatar's capture. His directionless and loveless drive is what leads him to encounter that same cultural intolerance that his own nation has for others. Zuko and Iroh are finally reunited during Azula's really, really close chase and capture of the Avatar and his friends. But they are reunited in a fashion that is a callback to a previous season one episode. During the storm, which is the name of the episode I just aforementioned, the audience learns more about Zuko's exile through the eyes and ears of his crew under Iroh's storytelling. The crew is eventually turned around on their mean-spirited view of Zuko and even admires his choosing not to pursue the Avatar after the storm out of the crew's safety. The conclusion of the chase sees him ward off the Avatar and his friends because of Azula's attack on Iroh. He chooses to again let the Avatar go, to let his honor go, for the safety of someone other than himself. A decision that he yet again makes when given the choice of either recapturing or freeing Appa, Aang's flying bison and animal companion. This time, Iroh's speech helps him see the futility of his mission, the futility from his many, many attempts at acquiring the Avatar, and through him, the admiration, love, and honor that he so desperately craves. His eventual decision to let Appa go creates this fever for his body to fight, and it creates these symptoms of withdrawal from his compulsive desire to fulfill his mission. The sudden opposition to this compulsion created something that neither his mind nor body could even compute. After snapping out of this fever, he is diametrically a changed man, fully embracing the persona that we, the audience, saw when he was just a young boy. But just when the audience and Zuko can finally breathe easy, the crossroads of destiny happens, the final episodes of the season of Book 2. Zuko and Iroh are again wrapped up within another conflict with the Avatar gang. After briefly becoming and enjoying this new carefree persona, he spends some time with one of his foes, gaining more insight as to what he has been chasing all this time. That is when the animator's camera then shows the duality of his new decision of whether or not he should help Avatar Aang and his friends escape or help Azula capture them. His new decision of whether or not he will cast aside his addiction or fall back onto it again is captured through the animator's camera. And as fate would have it, he makes the wrong decision, showing us that it's easy to make good decisions when you're surrounded by good people, but it takes a truly strong will to make the right decisions even when there is negative influence around you. When Zuko was with Iroh, he was able to do good again. But as soon as Azula came around, he fell back onto evil. He relapsed. Even if the season's going to end here, the audience can still see how painful it is for Zuko to relapse onto his 3-year-long addiction of capturing the Avatar, to see how painful of a look in Iroh's eyes is just essentially what Zuko's turning point for the next season is. Yet the showrunners and writers still give us more, not just in the form of the series' third and final season, but also in the form of the final moments of Zuko, of the crossroads of destiny. A hint of hope is given for his character when he turns away from Azula within the throne room of the now fallen Earth Kingdom, with not a proud look of victory, but a downward look of a sort of remorseful defeat, probably from the guilt of betraying his uncle Iroh, one of the few people still left within this world that believed in him. Stay tuned as we will conclude today's show on what aspiring storytellers and writers can learn from Zuko's character arc, as well as the extensive world of Avatar The Last Airbender. This has been Have I Got a Story for You with your host DJ Denouement on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Hello everyone, we are back on Have I Got a Story for You with your host DJ Denouement on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. So far we have been taking a look back on Avatar The Last Airbender, and we have taken a look back on the plot summaries of the first two seasons in the overall television series, Book 1 Water and Book 2 Earth, as well as the production background and history of creating the world of Avatar The Last Airbender, and the overall character arc of Prince Zuko seen throughout Book 2 Earth, otherwise known as the second season of Avatar The Last Airbender. Now I'd like to spend more time on what aspiring storytellers and writers can learn from not just the world of Avatar The Last Airbender, but from the character arc of Prince Zuko. Avatar The Last Airbender is one of few made-for-children television series that has transcended the targeted viewership of its original audience into something more. It has transcended in such a way that people of all ages can appreciate the show. There are many aspects that can be attributed to this appreciation, but one that I think is the most engaging and important draw of the show is its incorporation of cultural pride. The entire premise of the show is staked around one concept, war, which is a concept that is always risky to talk about. In our world, over the course of our human histories, so many lives have been lost to war. And stories like those of Avatars always remind us of the costs of war. It is honestly crazy to think about how such a series like this one has gained such a following of diehard fans, especially in regards to the amount of cultures and wars that has persisted during and after its original broadcast. Yet one of the main aspects that keeps this show's story so engaging is also what I think keeps everything else about it so relevant. To this day, our world is still facing cultural turmoil. It does not matter how much you don't want to look for it, it's still going to always be around. And I do not think that any of it will be going away anytime soon. One of the reasons why is because of cultural pride. So many different nations, both past and present, have started wars over cultural pride, mostly because of the amount of pride that is steeped within their ideas and views, within their cultures. And for Avatar The Last Airbender, the main antagonist is Fire Lord Ozai of the Fire Nation. A century before Ozai's rule over the nation, the previous ruler launched a full-scale war against everyone and everything in the world. And the new Fire Lord, Zuko's father, continued it, all because they saw expansion of their empire as the one true culture to rule over the rest. As Iroh would say, it is important to draw wisdom from many different places. If you take it from only one place, it becomes rigid and stale. Understanding others, the other elements, and the other nations will help you become whole. The nations within this world dress in clothing and construct architecture that carries their nation's amount of pride that they have within the culture. And to show how willing they are to defend them, and by extension themselves, from any outside force. The many colors of each of the four nations of Avatar The Last Airbender are so fully revealed to the audience. You can honestly see which character belongs to which nation whenever a new character pops up on screen, no matter if they're an important character for the episode or just a side character. And that is what I believe is to be the most important aspect when it comes to creating characters for such a show that incorporates cultural pride. But incorporating this level of cultural pride within a story that can be viewed by all audiences, also creates something important and relevant for people to hold on to. It creates something important for any aspiring storyteller and for any person to craft for others. It creates a sense of whimsy and wonder that is also held down in such a way, held down to the earth beneath itself, to help make characters more relatable to those that watch them, which I think is very important when it comes to creating characters that are so beloved, creating characters that are so appreciated by audiences worldwide. But the other aspect of this TV series that I feel like aspiring storytellers and writers should learn from is pacing. If there's one thing about Prince Zuko's arc, it is that it is a patient one. Not patient for those that follow and watch along with Prince Zuko and all of his struggles, but a patient one for writers to construct. Prince Zuko's character arc within Avatar The Last Airbender is probably one of, if not the most important arcs out of all of these central characters. Despite his not being the title character, his story is still recalled as one of the greatest to come from any fictional media. But why? On paper, the success of his story as a character should not have worked the way it did. He should not have gained so much attention and admiration, especially since he first started out as some whiny punk of a teenager that would not leave our titular character alone. And I think it is because of one thing known as patience. Again, as Iroh would say, you can't always see the light at the end of the tunnel, but if you just keep moving, you will come to a better place. Prince Zuko's entire character arc, from the start to the very end of the series, is not a gradual one, but a patient one. The change that turns him from fierce and driven to lost and directionless is one that happens on its own and over time. In book one, he is an angsty and rigid character with antics of capturing the Avatar, slowly growing more and more stale by the end of the season. In book two, however, he is now in the Earth Kingdom and drawing on its current culture while questioning his very own pride and his very own sense of admiration for his own culture. At this point, Zuko is not yet at the end of the tunnel, at that better place, but he is still moving. He is still on his own pace within his story. When it comes to crafting such a character like Zuko, where he does not immediately abandon his original ideals and views, it isn't really an easy feat to do. It isn't really an easy feat to create such a character that does what is in essence a long and overdramatized 180. But then again, doing what Zuko has done is not easy either. Sure, in the other characters and even the audience's eyes, he did make a mistake in betraying Iroh and himself by the end of the second season. But this just reinforces the idea that change, real change, does not happen overnight. It in fact takes time. It takes time to remedy a mistake, to even remedy what one character might have been before, and what they could be later on. Change within a story is always hard to incorporate, especially at the very start of any story. And the start of any story can be derailed when there is a new and sudden change that has not been recognized before. Now, Prince Zuko's story wouldn't have ever succeeded as much as it did if by the end of book one, he was a changed man. And by the beginning of book two, if he were already helping Avatar Aang and his friends by then, that can almost guarantee you that his story arc would be one of the worst and would be one of the worst received out of all of the audiences and critics alike. But this essence of change that takes place throughout the entirety of book two is what I believe helps create this sense of human aspect for audiences and critics to follow along within his story. And the fact that the idea of change, real change, taking time to remedy over a single character is what I think the head writers of this show nails. The idea that change happens even after stumbling for so long. That is what I believe aspiring storytellers and writers should learn from Avatar the Last Airbender and from Prince Zuko's character arc within that extensive world of fantastical action and philosophical debate. You have been listening to Have I Got a Story for You with your host, DJ Daniel Mon on Penguin Radio 102.3 FM, the official radio station at Dominican University of California. Thank you for listening.